Could you please state your full name for me, please?
Hattie Park.
What do you do for a living? Or what did you do for a living?
I think I'm still here, so I'm doing some things right now. I'm the director of the Champaign Schools Family Information Center. I'm also an ordained minister.
How long have you been doing it? Is it what you wanted to do? If not, what did you want to do, or what do you want to do?
Okay, in this particular position, I've been working in there since 1998, I believe it was, and at the time, it was when the schools of choice first started. So, I feel pretty good about that. That I was one of the we were the founders, not necessarily the founders, but we were the trailblazers to do the Family Information Center, the first one to be established in Champaign. So what I do is I work with families from all over the world with different ethnic groups. We do student assignments, so everyone that comes through the Champaign school system comes through our building, those who are new. And that position is designed to address inequities that were in the school system, but that is part of, and when we talk about busing, African Americans traditionally were forced to do most of the busing. And as a result of African Americans filing a lawsuit, the schools of choice came about, where the school district, Champaign School District, agreed that this is one way that they may be able to rectify those wrongs that were done to African Americans, where the blunt of busing was on their back. So right now the schools of choice gives people an option whether they're not, they want their kids bused, or if they want to stay in their neighborhood. And that's based on available seats.
How did your education help you prepare you for what you do for a living today?
I think when I talk about education, I think that you can also be educated in more ways than just a formal education. Mm-hmm. I think life in itself is an education. Mm-hmm. My education, where I went on to, I went to an all African American elementary school, which I think was great. I had all African American teachers, which again I think was great. Our neighborhood was predominantly African Americans, and what later on ended up back in those days, people got married at a young age, and I was no exception to that. But later on, realizing what I needed to do, I went on and continued my college education, and went to Parkland College and graduated from there, and went on to Eastern Illinois University, where, as a matter of fact, I was named one of 8 in the country as an outstanding adult learner. So education, I think, and then I've gone on and taken graduate courses, but I think education is the key for whatever you want to do in life. If, in fact, you can't read or you can't write, then you can't really make a big difference, because you won't know what the world is doing around you. So education is the key that will open up many doors of opportunities for you and me.
How long have you lived in Champaign or Urbana?
Well, I was born and raised in Champaign and Urbana. I was born in 1942, but didn't always stay here. As a matter of fact, my family was one of the first black settlers here when they came in on the railroad. So, and was the founder of the first Church of God in Christ. They were founders here. So Champaign, I would say that I've been here basically most of my life, other than when I lived out east. So if you count up those years, I would say probably about maybe over 50 years.
What church did you attend while growing up?
When I was growing up, I attended Grove Street Church of God in Christ, which is still in existence today. And then from there, as a teenager, I wanted to go to the church where many of my friends attended, and I attended Salem Baptist Church, and moved from Salem and went to New Jersey, where I attended Ferry Avenue Methodist Church. And then I ended up going to Germany, and I attended a church in Germany. Also from there, I came back to Champaign and ended up uniting with Mount Olive Baptist Church. And then when the Lord had a calling on my life to be a minister, many of the Baptists did not believe in women ministers, so I ended up going to the Church of the Living God, the Pillar Ground of Truth, is where I am right now as an associate minister.
What role do you think your church played in your life as a whole?
I won't say a building played an important part in my life.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say is the fact that I had a personal relationship with God himself is what really was significant to me. So I could say that my church did play a part because they're the one that taught me the scriptures. They're the ones that we were able to fellowship together and to come together. But I think we've got to remember the most important thing is that when we're talking about how things are played into our lives, is how God himself comes in and take and become part of our lives. And the church is in us.
Mm-hmm.
So the church can be a building, but the building per se, I think, played an important part in my life. Because as I said earlier, many of the teenagers attended the same church, and you want to be part of the group. And that was where you went to.
When you were a young child or a teenager, did the church say anything about racism or prejudice?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I was very active back during that time. I would say probably around 57, 58, or maybe later, Champaign-Urbana was not integrated. It was still segregated. And one of the things that had happened is that during my teen years, African-Americans were not allowed to sit at the lunch counters here in Champaign and Urbana. So I was part of that movement where we picketed W.T. Grant's, but also J.C. Penney's. And picketing J.C. Penney's was because they would not hire African-American employees. And one of the things that happened during that time where we had the sit-ins, we had the marches, and I was spit on and called the N-word, which was not necessarily nice. And I was one of the first persons to be hired at Jewel T, which is Eisner's, whereas it was to integrate that position. So that was a lot when you're talking about integration and you being one of the trailblazers, that you've got to take things and sometimes hold things in that you wouldn't necessarily like to people to act that way toward you.
You said that people called you the N-word and were very rude to you. And I read an article that they said, where it said that they had said rude things and even went so far as to spit on you. How did that make you feel as a person for somebody to actually, you know, spit on you and call you mean words for just for fighting for your people?
Well, you know, not even so much fighting for our, you know, fighting for our people too. But you also want to look at the fact that people would do that because my color was different than someone else's. My pigmentation of my skin may have been a little darker than someone else. One of the things, and I guess I could sum it up in this story, as to how I felt. As I said to you earlier, that I was one of the first African Americans to be hired at Eisner's offices. And It was a girl that was there who had was a farmer, and her barn had caught on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And she came into work and she said, my barn caught on fire and my hair got wet and it looked like nigger's wool. And then she looked at me, she said, oh, I am so sorry. And I said, don't be sorry. I said, you can't help the way you are. She said, but you make it sound even worse. And my words to her was, now you realize just how you sound. So ignorance is what I look at. It hurt, it cut deep. But I also realized that if I didn't go through it, then it would not be an opportunity for you to be sitting here at WILL doing this interview, because African Americans at that time were not allowed to do that. And many times even were not allowed to go and sleep in the dorms at the University of Illinois. And so I think that it hurt, mm-hmm. but I also knew that I could not retaliate because we were a nonviolent movement.
I want to ask you some questions about your school experiences. What kind of grades did you get when you went to an all-black school?
I don't remember all of my grades, but I think I did okay. I could read, I could write, I could do math, which may be different than what African Americans are experiencing right now. But I know this, that some of the things that I was taught in a predominantly black school was that, first of all, we respected each other, and you respected your elders. You never heard of African-American children talking back to adults. You never heard of African-American children acting out, because Champaign and Urbana at that particular time was really, when the saying goes, it takes a village to raise a child. That is the way it was. But I would say I had some of the best teachers there were. One of them was Mrs. Calmes, who taught for years here. Mr. Stratton, who Stratton School is named after. And I could go on, but I think that I got a good education from them. Many may, when we think about integration, but and people think about being separate but equal. And I couldn't really compare as to what my schooling was, where I lived, and then where others may have lived of a different color, because I was not exposed to what they were exposed to. However, I think that once I went to the middle school, and it's ironic that at the time I went, the school that you're going now was the first class to really integrate that school. It was a new school at that particular time.
Do you think that your grades changed when you went to, when you started going to an integrated school? And if they changed, why do you think that was?
I think that there was a change, and I think that had to do with what the teacher's expectation was. And give you an example of that. When I was at Franklin, I was told don't take college prep courses, to take basically home economics and those kind of classes, because I was not college material. So therefore, if in fact you're telling me that I'm not college material, then that means that you don't think very much of me or what my potentials could be. I think that life and death is in the power of our tongue. If we speak, that you will do well. And I think that's the same way with teachers. If teachers expect you to do poorly, then more than likely it'll be a self-fulfilling prophecy where you do poorly. However, if in fact teachers will say to you that you can do it, and you encourage a person to do that, and I'm kind of reminded of a girl who wanted to go into nursing, and what happened is the teacher went and got her a biology book, who she had never seen that book before, and gave it to the girl and said, "See, look at this. You can't do this." Therefore, the girl changed her major and did not go into nursing based on what someone told her that she could not do. Because none of us have learned anything until we're taught. But to automatically look at a book and say, because of the color of your skin, you're not able to take nursing, I think that's a disservice to any child.
How did that make you feel when someone was so ignorant to tell you that you have to take the home economic classes because you're not college material? How did that make you feel?
I felt terrible. But then I thought some years later, I'd like to see him and tell him, I was college material after all.
So do you feel that you got a good education?
In what? In a black school?
No, in general.
I think so. Many things that I didn't learn that I should have learned later on in life, I had to learn it. And I think that we, as long as we live, we do learn. And it's always an educational process. None of us know everything. So I think the education that I received in the public schools were okay. Can't say that, boy, it was a bomb. When I do a comparison with what my kids have learned, now I look at my kids' education, I say, yeah, that's the bomb. So it's all of that in a bag of chips. Tickling on that one.
Were there cases where you felt discriminated against in your white schools that you went to?
Sure.
Were there any specific stories that you have for that?
That I could share as to how I felt integration at when I went to mixed school?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You want me to tell you about your school?
Yes.
Which is Franklin. Okay.
Yes.
One of the things was that we had to walk to school.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we used to have an activity room, which was upstairs at Franklin. And in that activity room, we used to have a jukebox where you could play music and you could dance.
Mm.
And you would have white kids on one end, black kids on another. When you ate lunch, white kids on one table, black children on another. But when it came to saying, I would love to be a cheerleader,
mm-hmm.
we as African Americans were not afforded that. Now, the boys could play basketball and those kinds of things, but as far as the girls being able to do that, that was not the case. I never saw a black president at Franklin
mm-hmm.
or a treasurer, those kinds of things. The only thing that I can remember that we did mm-hmm. was embroidery. And if you look at using embroidery, I think that's good to learn. But what does that say? Did that say to me that the only thing that I could do was sewing and cooking, since that was the only thing that I was being exposed to? So I think, I experienced the discrimination. And again, the teacher that told me that was from Franklin.
Hmm. Were there things that happened in your high school days that shaped or were there life shaping changes in high school that you went to?
Yes, and that would have been Champaign. We used to call it Champaign High School.
Mm-hmm.
That is now Champaign Central mm-hmm. High School. And I would say, yes, there were some things that that was changing, that changed my life. Things that I can remember reading a story about how that you can be driving along and you can be hypnotized if you don't have any things that you look off at, and rather than just keeping focus in the front. So you need to be able to look off and on. So that was something that seems minor, but one of the things that that was a life learning thing for me, that even though I was looking off on some things, it did teach me that I need to be focused on what I was about. So I think that was a learning experience from Champaign High School.
I noticed that you said, that you, in a paper, that you were boycotting for the JCPenney thing. Did Mr. John Lee Johnson help you with that?
Yeah, he was involved, but it wasn't just him and me. It was several. One guy named, we used to call him Squirt, but it was William Yancey. You had the ministers that were around, Pastor Williams at that time. You had many people that were involved. But as far as many that are here in Champaign now. I think John Lee was an activist, and he continues to be one. But it wasn't just him. It was Terry Townsend. You can go on where many did the same thing. So boycotting was one means of us making a change in Champaign High School. Another place where African Americans were not allowed to eat was at, they used to call it the dime store, it was S.S. Kresge's. You were not allowed to sit at the lunch counter. Another place downtown, which exists now, was Carmen's. And today, I've never been in Carmen's. And I wonder sometimes, is that a thing that goes back from when, you know, back when it was segregated, that I've never been in there and have never had the desire, as old as I am now, that I'd want to go. And you're probably saying, where's Carmen's at?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you went straight down Washington Street, you remember that restaurant that you run right into on Neal Street, right in the front of you? That's Carmen's. But I've not been into that store since then. Never been in there because it was, at that particular time back then, it was segregated. And so maybe it's a thing on me that I need to overcome. Maybe I'll just go in to say that, look, I'm going to integrate this place.
When you were in school, what did your parents talk to you about as far as school work? Did they have high expectations for you in school?
I think they did. They said, do and learn all you can. Remember back then that my mother had I think she may have finished high school. I can't remember exactly. But my dad didn't have a real, he may have finished up to about the ninth grade or so. I can't remember exactly. But, yeah, they had high expectation of us that we were to go to school, listen, and learn. Those were the keys that they told us.
Did your school experience in any way put roadblocks to your goals?
Oh, for sure. You know, but then too, the roadblocks were there, but that did not stop me from completing my goals. The roadblock was that I wasn't college material, so therefore, I was not geared toward college prep courses. So those were roadblocks. But the thing is, roadblocks can be moved.
What people helped you to shape who you are? Did you have any certain role models?
Yes, I did. I would say that it was my grandmother. Her name was Amy Chipman. She was, I would like to say that she was a businesswoman, that she would take laundry and do laundry in her home. And she had a work ethic that she would work very hard. So I think my grandmother and then my mother was a role model. Because I saw how my mother would take in children, take in people who did not have what we had, and she was always willing to share. And she, too, was a person, I wouldn't say stingy, but she didn't let people play with her money. If you owed her, you had to pay her money. But she accumulated houses and was able to become an entrepreneur in her own right, being able to do that. And then my father. You know, I can look around and say other people, but I think my immediate family was my role model. When I saw how hard my father would work, and he was my role model as to what a man is supposed to do. You know, we as women, we look for men to do certain things, but I looked at my father and I saw how he worked. He brought his check home to my mother and gave it to her, and she took care of the household, and we never had a hungry day. Then my father would take us to the movies on Saturday and bring our friends and stuff. So it was a special time. I think my father, my mother, and my grandmother were really my role models.
What were the expectations for you around school?
When I was in school, mm-hmm. See what the expectation was? That I would finish high school. I think that is what they could see. Not necessarily the fact that it was going to be college beyond that, because they themselves have not been exposed to that. But I think what it was that I would complete high school.
What was your attitude towards learning, and where did you think you got this perspective from?
my attitude toward learning was that to be all you can be, and kind of like a mind is a terrible thing to waste. And I think that goes back with in the 60s with Martin Luther King and that movement and how important that was. And even the Brown versus Brown decision, that education was important. And my attitude is that we can do anything that we want to do if we put our mind to it. And then you think in terms of that you can do all things through Christ who strengthens you.
Were there any goals that you made when you was a young child for as far as education for when you got older?
Back then, I think my goal probably would have been that I just finished high school. That's what I was seeing in the future. And then to get married, you know, and have these children and live in a house with a little picket fence and all of those things, because we watch so much of Leave It to Beaver and those kinds of programs. So I think that's what my program was.
So both your parents raised you.
Yes.
Were there other people that raised you, that helped to raise you, and what were their expectations for our school?
My mother and father were together, and they raised me. And I was raised in a house with my brother and a cousin who was a brother, but his mother was killed, and my parents raised him. And as far as others, I can look at people that was in my community. Everybody helped raise us. If I remember one lady named Maggie Bell Johnson, who lived down the street, who used to play ball with us, and your neighbors helped raise you. If you acted out, they would check you, whip you. And see, in the African-American culture, you may say whipping, or I'm going to beat you, or I'm going to beat the death out of you, or I'm going to kill you. That doesn't literally mean they're going to kill you. That means that they're going to straighten you out. And they would whip you and send you home to your parents, and your parents would whip you. So, or they would call on the phone and tell your parents when you acted up. So I think that it was a community effort to raise the people in our community.
Were there any points in your life where you experienced prejudice or racism at a school?
Yes.
And what were they?
Ooh, it would take me a whole 2 days to tell you all of that. But I think when I look back at job situations that I experienced, racial discrimination that really, really bothers me. I can say one that was at Chanute Air Force Base was where I had more education than this guy, mm-hmm. had more experience working with children, mm-hmm. and yet and still he was hired for the job because he was white and I was black. And so that was one of that's just one of many things that I experienced. But one of the things that I also know this, that if in fact you as a people and me as a people being discriminated against, you just don't lay down on the rug and take it. You need to get up and you have to fight for what's right. And I think that was an experience I had, because one of the things that that this guy did, I had the education, and to give me a remedy, they hired me, but as his assistant, mm-hmm. and he pulled out a gun and held it up when I'd ask him for a tape measure, and that was to frighten me. And he said to me, "I'm going to get you," after pulling out this gun. I said, "When you get me, you better make sure you get me good." So one of the things that I made up in my mind a long time ago, I will not, under no circumstances, allow someone to discriminate against me when I know that it's not right. And if I'm wrong, I'm going to keep my mouth shut and move. But in the same token, I don't want to ever be guilty of doing something to someone that is not right. But I think we as a people, and that's what it's all about, regardless of what let's get away from the ethnicity, but as a people, we've got to stand up for what's right. If it's a fact that a child is being abused, you've got to stand up for that. Or if you see a child that's hungry, we've got to stand up and say, I'll take a stand and feed that child. If a child doesn't have clothing, you've got to stand up for what's right, and that means to clothe that child. So even with racial discrimination that we've experienced, we've got to be to the point where that we stand up for what's right, regardless of what the color or the national origin that you come from or age, that we need to do what's right.
How did your family and friends talk about racism throughout your life?
Some of the things that I used to hear is, don't you trust those white people. You know they're not going to do what's right. And I think we as black people, we had racism in our culture as well. And one of the things that we were told is that you watch out. You never really trust it. And that was, I think that was put into many of us as youngsters. But I'm grateful that we do learn as we get older that some of the things that they said was not necessarily were that were true. So I think one of the things that I remember being taught is that you just don't trust them. Not necessarily that they were bad, but my mother, my father, I should say, his mother was half white, and he lived in Mississippi. And one of the things that happened is my father was the kind of man that if you called him one of the N words, he wasn't going to turn the other cheek. He was going to retaliate, and he would hit and that. And in this one particular time in Grenada, Mississippi, my father was called the N word, and he beat the guy. And his grandfather, who was white at that particular time, put him on a bus and sent him up north to his father because he knew that he would be lynched in Mississippi. So one of the things as a result of that, my father used to tell us that story all the time. Then another uncle who was from down south who came up, and how they had said he'd been kicked by a mule, but when in essence he'd been beaten and killed by a group of white men. So those are things that not necessarily that they say, but if you tell that story long enough, you get the point, to the point, well, I better be careful as to what I say and who I associate with.
Did your parents often talk about racism in the school? Did they ask you questions to find out were people being racist towards you in school?
They wouldn't have to ask me the questions. I think we were always forthcoming because I think our parents had taught us that if, in fact, things are not right, you got some concerns, then you tell us about it. And I think that's what we did. We let our parents know when things were not right.
Did your parents talk about any of the ongoing civil rights battles to end segregation? Were they one of the activists?
I don't know how active they were in doing that. I do know that that my mother supported us when we were involved in that. You look back in the 20s and the 30s when my mother and them was born and raised, you didn't talk a whole lot about integration. But if you look in the 50s and the 60s is when it really came into play. And at that time, I think that they were really supporters, especially of the movement that Martin Luther King and stuff. They were all supportive of that. And I remember them saying, go, and you know, what little money they could, they would give out and help with that movement.
What did you know about the struggle to integrate the schools that were segregated in the Brown versus Board of Education?
Okay, I know about the Brown versus Board of Education, where this child had to pass by a school that was closer to her and go to an all-black school. And so, therefore, that was what that was basically all about in a nutshell. But then we look at, when we're talking about the same thing here in Champaign and Urbana, I know many kids who went to an all-integrated school, but I didn't have that luxury to do that. Later on in life, they did, but ours were segregated schools. Later on, we got to go in integration when we were in the middle school, and I don't know if I'm answering your question or not with that, but I do remember the Brown versus Brown Board of Education. I was 12 years old when that took place. So that affected me as a young person. When you're talking about 12 years old, I look at my granddaughter right now, who is 11, and we took her to Memphis to the museum down there, the Civil Rights Museum down there. And one of the things that she did, it's one part of it where you get on a bus, and when you sit on that bus, it'll say, "Nigger, get to the back of the bus." And it scared her so that she cried and she cried. And we had to take her out of the museum. And she couldn't go any further because it had such a impact on her little life. And she's 11 years old. And so right today, she would not go back into that museum after experiencing that on that bus situation. So I think that when you look at education and the things that young people go through, it can be pretty frightening. And it's not going to be something that you can get over with overnight, but it's going to take years of getting over.
Were there other people around you talking about the issues of Brown versus Board of Education?
Well, I would say my parents in the school to a degree. I don't remember, you're talking about many, many years ago, but at 12 years old, they may not have said so much, or I was in my own world. We were in jumping ropes and all of that kind of stuff that it really made a big, big impact on us. But I think down the line, you did see the impact that it had taken place.
Did any of your schools change in meaningful ways during the time you were in school?
Did any of my schools change in a meaningful way?
Mm-hmm.
And can you give me a little more specifics on that?
Did your school change? Like, if you look back at the schools that you went to today, have they changed in a meaningful way? Like, are they better today or are they even worse?
In one instance, if we look at where we are as a people, African-American children, it may be worse now in many ways. And I only say that, and it's hard to generalize. When I look at some of the reports that I'm reading, mm-hmm. where African-Americans have the highest suspension rates in the schools, we did not have that before. When I look at the number of African Americans who cannot read, I didn't see that before. When we look at the number of African Americans who are, or young people I'm talking about, are disrespectful to the elders, we did not have that before. So I think with some things we've lost. Right now, you don't have as many black role models that you all can look up to as we had before. We saw the black teachers. We saw the black doctors. You've got some that's in the area now. But if you look around, do we really have that many African-American professional doctors and lawyers and those kinds of things? I think we've lost some ground. And even with businesses in Champaign and Urbana, I think that we lost. Back when I was growing up, there were all kind of African-American businesses in the community. And now when we look, you can name them probably on one hand. So did it make it better? That's anybody's guess. We can go to school that's integrated. But does that mean because I go to school, or am I allowed to go to school with a white child, that because something that this white child got is going to rub off on me and make me better? Could work the opposite. Something I've got could make it better for this white child as well. So I guess when I look at things being better, I don't think we've arrived yet. We got a long way to go. But some of the things that I see that's happening in the schools with African-American children disturbs me. So I think that we need to go back to a lot of the things that... See, I guess what I'm looking at is, if you look at... Everybody says that some things are better. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily mean we've got moved into different times, because you learn more. You've got the computer knowledge. You've got all of that that you've got going as a African-American young lady. But some of the things, and I know you know, that you see happening with our race as far as character. African-Americans was never on drugs and stuff like they are now. We may have been unemployed, but we used to find our jobs and make our jobs, and we would take care of our families. We've got a high percentage of young girls that are pregnant that are not married. So I think we've lost something. It was a disgrace back then. If you had a baby and weren't married, you would be ostracized. But now it's coming to be commonplace. When we've got young girls, African-American girls, that's 13, 14 years old, indulging in adult stuff that they shouldn't be, then we got a problem, because it's babies raising babies. And, you know, everybody's, oh, it's so cute. But it's not like a doll that you can put down and pick up. You've got that for a lifetime that you've got to deal with. So I think integration has helped. But we can't blame integration for the woes that's in our community with our African-American families right now. I think sometimes, I know Juwan's and Fuju thinks it's a conspiracy to destroy the black boy. And when I look at the number of African-American boys that are being suspended, we don't know if it's a conspiracy, but somewhere along the line we've lost it, and we've got to get it back. We got to get our kids back where that they can make a difference. If you don't get the education you need, then what will happen? You will have lost a race. Go to Africa and you see the accomplishments that Africans are making in that country. And we're part of that continent. So we need to get back and get the character and the things that we used to do. We need to bring some of that back into play.
Now I just want to ask you a variety of questions. What is the relationship with you and Mr. John Lee Johnson for boycotting and making changes for African-American children?
What was, you mean as far as making a back then?
Mm-hmm.
What was the relationship? I think we were all on the same page, that you wanted what was best for our people at that particular time. So I would say that's what John Lee's agenda was and is now. And I think that he and I both have that in common, that we want to make a change that will be a betterment for the community, where that all children will benefit from it.
What grade were you in when a teacher tells you that you weren't college material?
I believe that was going into the ninth grade. Might have been sixth, seventh, eighth. Yeah, I think that may have been going into the eighth and ninth grade. I know I was at Franklin, and I know it's right down there from the gym where he told me at. That's where the class was. So I do remember that pretty vividly.
What do you think of the school systems today?
I think of the school system today. I think that there's efforts being made to try to improve things. And I think that that will continue. But I think that we've got to be committed to wanting to make a change in our school system. Mm-hmm. You can get a new leader, but the leader is only as strong as the Indians. I mean, well, I won't say the Indians, but because I don't want to offend anybody. Because one of the things that we used to say, everybody wants to be the chief, but nobody wants to be the brave. But the people who are out in the trenches, who are educating our children, it's going to take a commitment from each one of them to make a difference and to want to make a difference. So I think changes are coming about. Changes can be good if, in fact, it's going to be the betterment of everybody's situation.
Do you think that the classes are integrated? Are there some classes where they're mostly white students and some classes where they're mostly black students? Do you guys focus on that as a school district?
Yes. When we're talking about focusing on that, that's what my job is all about, to make sure that they are integrated. What we have is you look at what over the past 3 years as to what the African-American population was, and you average that out, and it was 35%. And you can have 35% plus or minus 15% of African-Americans in a school. So you could have up to 20% or no more than 50%. So therefore, you integrate, and we can integrate the schools. Mm-hmm. But once they're in the schools, then it's up to the principals to do the integration in the classroom. Because we can integrate where that you're going into the school, but then the schools themselves could turn around and segregate the classroom, because you could assign all white or you could assign all black. That part of the schools of choice, we don't have anything to do with. So it's a matter of the principal being committed that once those kids are in there, that they will make sure or try every effort to integrate those classrooms.
Okay. Have you been in the classes that are in the Unit 4 school district, and when you go in there, can you tell a difference? If you were just to walk into two different classrooms, could you tell if one was like honors and then one was just a regular class?
Yes.
Because I'm in the honors program and there are only like
two or three blacks.
No, there are about four of us. So how do you feel about that? Do you think that when you were a child, that more African Americans would have been in that class, or
if we were in a black school?
Mm-hmm.
I think so, because you would only have that as your framework. But see, with the gifted program, which you're in, when we're talking about the honors, that's what you look at. They're making some progress, but you still have a long way to go. So yes, I could go into a classroom right now and look at a gifted, I could go and look at two classrooms. I could see which one is a gifted, and I could tell which one was a non-gifted. And again, I had two granddaughters that were in the gifted classes. And in one instance, my granddaughter and another girl were the only two African-American children that was in that class. Then later on, my one granddaughter was the only one in her class. And so how do you relate to that? How does it make you feel that you see, I'm switching it around to you, that you see it's only four of you that's in that class? How does that make you feel?
Well, I feel good that I'm in it, but then I have two classes that are regular classes, and I wish that more of my African-American peers could be in the honors program, because they're smart enough, because they're just as intelligent as any of my white peers. But I think that they could try harder, and if they did that, then we would have the majority over the white.
Right. One of the things that you may or may not be aware of, see, it used to be that the only way you could get in the honors program was the fact that you would be nominated by a teacher. and many are the parent. And so African Americans did not have that luxury. But what Mary Muller has done now is that she's testing all first graders to see if they are eligible for gifted. And it gives them opportunity to go into the gifted classroom. But see, one of the things that I don't think that has been addressed when as you're bringing that up is the gifted as far as it is in the middle school, because that doesn't happen.
What made you want to work for the family service after being treated so poorly by the local schools as a student when you were a child?
You know what? I worked for the school district before, and I thought that it was very important to have someone in there representing African-American children that was going to look out for them, too. And I worked at Columbia School, which was predominantly black at that time, and did a lot of things there. As a matter of fact, when I took this job, it was not a job that I was looking for. Other people asked me to take the job because they felt that I would do well working with all segments of the community. And I must say that it has been an enjoyable and exciting and different job. So that much I'm glad to have been one of the director to first start something like that.
Who is the person who most inspires you to do with you? What do you do? Is it the children or is it your background?
Children. Oh, no doubt about it. The children. Not the background. It's the children. I have raised over 100 foster children and 4 of my own. And one of the things that I have, some things you're just passionate about. And I am really passionate about kids. And it irks me if people mistreat a child. That is just, it gores me to the inside that if a child is mistreated in any kind of way, I'm going to be the first one there to stand up and say, hey, no, don't do this to this kid. I don't want to see a child hungry. I don't want to see a child cold. A child came in the Family Information Center and didn't have a pair of socks on, and I didn't wait for that child to say, can you get me a pair of socks? I saw a need, and I try to provide that need. And that's what we've got to do. You don't have to say, do you need me to do this? If you see a need, then you take on that responsibility to go and say, here, let me help out. And I think that's what it is. Children are just, I think that's our future. And what we deposit in them will mean what we're going to get out. And when I look at children, you've got some people that's going to either add to your life, subtract from your life, multiply, or divide you. So if you can't add, multiply, then don't divide me up. And that's the way I look at when we're talking about children.
In what year did you receive the Outstanding Adult Award? Why did you receive this award?
I think that might have been in 1989. And that was, I went to adult education at Eastern Illinois University. And I was raising 8 foster children and 4 of my biological children and going to school and working at the same time. And Eastern Illinois University nominated me, and they saw all the kids that came to my graduation when I graduated from Eastern. And we had almost a balcony full. And they saw that, and they had this nomination, and they nominated me as one of their outstanding adult learners. And that was going to school and be able to overcome so many obstacles. And when they... I was nominated for it and was chosen out of one. It was 8, and I was one of those 8 in the nation to be honored. And to get that kind of honor and go to Washington, D.C., and to get the accolades from Barbara Bush and those kinds of things, and the senators that were here, Simon, he's dead now, but Terry Bruce and all of those guys that, you know, here's people, senators that you would never meet, but here it is, a little girl from a segregated community to be honored like that in Washington, D.C. And then to be on TV and someone that saw it knew me because they used to be my neighbor and called into the radio station. And just to hear from somebody that was from home, it was an honor. But also to be able to take my my foster child, who is Sienna Ogoriwe, who is a girl from Africa. And we all went to D.C. and was honored there, and all of my children came. So that is what I got the award for, just being an outstanding learner. And then on top of that, I got to go back to Charleston. I went to Charleston to speak to Adult and Continuing Ed, their big conference, and to be able to share with them the things I went through and had to overcome. Part of that was a situation I told you at Chanute, and still be able to get my education. I think that was something in itself.
What made you want to be a minister?
Well, you know what? I just, at one time, had just enjoyed being a member. But I remember getting, and you can read this in a book that, that's been printed about me. I'm featured in one of these books, a new one that was released this summer, called Women in Power by Sheila Donner. And that's D-O-W-N-E-R. I think that's the way her name is spelled. But one of the things that happened was that I had saw a vision, and in that vision he said, do you promise to serve me? And I said, Lord, I promise you I'll serve you till I die. And when he said that to me, that is when I went for to be a minister, to minister on his behalf.
What made you want to be a civil rights activist?
I like to fight for what's right. And I think it may be something that's innate in me, that I believe in doing what's right, and being, I believed in the civil rights movement. So I think that is what really spurred me on to, and to make a difference. You know, I didn't, when I got spit on, I thought that me getting spit on was going to make it better for you, my children, my grandchildren, and my children's children. So that is one thing that really spurred me on.
How do you think the two jobs connect?
Oh, I think that being a minister and being the director of the Family Information Center, it interconnects not so much with the religious part, but I think it puts a lot of compassion in your heart, and you've got to have compassion to work with so many families and be able to comfort them and do things to help them. And most of all, I think it gives you character. And that teaches you character, I think, is what people don't see. That, you know, if nobody's not looking, you're going to still have that that kind of character. And with me in that position and as a minister, I'm not going to compromise. I'm going to treat you the same way I would treat anybody else. And I'm not going to allow, if I'm doing an assignment, I'm not going to assign somebody because it's your friend or it's my friend. I'm not going to do that. Everybody's going to be treated equally across the board. And I think being a minister and being a child of God, that that is something that I would never, ever want to bring any open shame onto the Lord. If I compromise, then he would be put to shame, and I'm not going to do that.
Do your grandchildren or any of your children attend the school district, the Unifor school district?
Yes. I had four children that went through Unifor school district. I have a daughter who was in education, was in pre-med, and then went on in education. So she works over at the Pavilion. Her name is Lisa. Then I had another daughter who was Natalie, who went into education and decided that's not what she wanted. and she became a beautician. So she went all the way through college, did her student teaching, and decided that was not for her. So she owns Anointed Hands Beauty Salon.
Yeah, she does my auntie hair.
Does she? Then I've got my son. He was the went through Champaign schools, and he's an attorney in New Jersey. As a matter of fact, he was the founder of the first owned and operated African-American internet provider in the country called Black Cyberspace, and that's my son. Then I've got a young daughter who is different than any of them, and she's in education, and she works for the Pavilion with children with special needs. I've got, number of grandsons. They didn't go through Champaign. They went through Urbana's. And my oldest grandson is Kevin, and he's at Millikan University. And this is his last year, and he'll graduate in May. And then I've got another grandson that's down in Utica, Mississippi, going to